This is Popular Front, a podcast focused on the niche details of modern warfare and underreported conflict with me, Jake Hanrahan. Today we're speaking to writer and director Berry Shalmashi. She's going to be speaking to us about the events in Iran where a young woman, Jina Masha Amini, was beaten to death by the so-called morality police. Her killing sparked protests all across the country, beginning in the Kurdish areas and now spreading everywhere. Berry's going to go into detail about what's happening there. If you like what we're doing here at Popular Front, please do support us at patreon.com/popularfront. Or you can buy merch at popularfront.shop. So, Berry, firstly, can you kind of... I think it would be best to explain the situation. What happened to Jina? You know, the morality police, she got attacked and, like, very sadly, she died. Maybe you can just kind of go over all of that. What actually happened to her in the first place before these riots started?
Jina was a young woman from Saqqas, a Kurdish city in Iran. She went on a trip to Tehran with her family. And actually, it is said that her younger brother already said, should we actually take Jina? You know, we're not really from there. Kind of feeling uncomfortable with his sister being in Tehran, where other rules apply, and other rules apply to minorities visiting, definitely. So as everyone has probably heard, Jina was captured by the morality police in Tehran, which is kind of a regular thing for them to roam around the city and gather women, put them on a van and punish them for not wearing their clothes properly according to their standards.
I think a lot of people almost think it's a joke when they hear, you know, morality police. I mean, to be honest, I've been putting it kind of like quotation marks, because the idea that they're protecting like morals while beating up women because they don't have the right dress wear, what they think is the right dress, is insane. But maybe you can just explain, what are the morality police?
So the morality police, in my understanding, is this department of the general police that is roaming around the city, checking up on women and how appropriate they're dressed when they come out. And by appropriate, I mean to the standards of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which means you have to put on like a long coat over knee. Your figure should not show. And of course, your hair should be covered. And Jina, in the details, people say her, I don't know, her jeans, her trousers, her pants were too tight. And this is a detail I've heard for the last couple of days. So she was in the van, and according to eyewitnesses, they were beating her up and later, she was taken to a hospital where she was already brain dead. And in the end, she died from her wounds. There's an important nuance where the government tried to make people believe she got a heart attack or something, which is almost code in Iran for, hey, there's something else.
Yeah, and they released some weird, like, doctored footage saying that she tripped or something like this as well. Like, it was so obviously, you know, they cut it a certain way. It was just nonsense. But I've seen, like, you know, pro-regime people being like, no, she didn't get beaten up at all. Like, she fell over. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that. And it's funny how, you know, when people are lying and they make the lie worse by everything they add. I think that was exactly what's going on.
So she gets, she essentially, they beat her up. She ended up brain dead. There was a lot of kind of, I don't know, there was a lot of attention on that. Why specifically was this so big, do you think? Because this is not the first time the so-called morality police have done something like this.
You know, it's always hard to say where the fire ignites in Iran, because there's a lot of reasons to be angry. And every few years, people burst out in protests. And of course, this one is huge, and we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But this time, I feel like just everything together, the timing, everyone is so tired again of all the oppression of everything that is going on in Iran. And then also add to that, and that's why, and I'm sure we'll get into that too, it's important to note that Gina was Kurdish. I think the Kurds in Iran are so fed up and have nothing to lose that when Gina's body was taken back to Saqqas, to Kurdish, I would say Iranian Kurdistan or Eastern Kurdistan or Kurdish city in Iran or whatever you want to call it really, or Rosh Halat, the best one, Jake. when she was taken back, there was no time to research, or how do you say that in proper English, to check up on what actually happened. And then,
like an autopsy on the body.
Yes. And yeah. She had to be buried the next morning. Mm. But her funeral turned into a huge protest. And that's how it started. I mean, how much more anger can you gather than in this situation? And then other Kurdish cities joined in the protests. And of course, people in Tehran, in the capital, joined as well. And then because you had the Kurds and at the same time communities in Tehran, that means it's not just one ethnicity or one class in society supporting these protests. It spread like a wildfire after.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really relevant point, because unfortunately, you know, even kind of Iranian people that I know, some were like, why is Popular Front pointing out that Gina was Kurdish? Why aren't you using the other name that everyone else is using in the hashtag? And, you know, we thought, well, you know, obviously we have had a lot to do with the kind of Kurdish struggle in every part where Kurdistan is. You know, on the ground, obviously, I even went to prison, you know, for reporting on it. So for us, it's, you know, it's kind of close to our heart. So we do a lot of research on it. We understand it. And I felt, well, like, yeah, it's particularly relevant in Iran because, well, maybe you can explain, like, what it's like for persecution. I mean, I know everybody, if they step out of line, you know, in Iran from the regime, they get persecuted. But Kurds get it particularly bad, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. Also, if you look at the numbers of people getting executed or imprisoned, at least half of those people are Kurdish. Mm. So I think that says a lot. Even if you like don't follow the news, I think these facts just state the situation. And what is really nice about the current protests is how it has gathered everyone within Iran from every layer of society, all walks of life, and all different ethnicities. If you look at the map of Iran and where the protests are, they're all over the country. That's why some Iranian people, non-Kurds, say, please don't focus on the Kurdish side of the story too much. But at the same time, it has so much to do with the Kurdish side of the story that this happened, and how it has fueled this these growing protests is so relevant. You can't ignore that. And then to get back to what you were asking, there's so many. If you're going to stand up for women's rights, you have to equally stand up for human rights and see how your country or Iran, if you feel related to that place in any way, if there's anything going on in that country, any suppression the government is pushing for, you will always see the double effect in Kurdish regions. So that must mean something, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think I was reading like the vast majority of people that die from hanging are Kurdish as well, like the public hanging, like extremely brutal.
Also, if you see images from those hangings, even if they've cropped the faces of the pictures, it's always in Kurdish pants.
Yes, Yeah, just the legs dangling. Yeah. So there was the funeral, and then the protest kind of culminated around that. Then they spread like wildfire. Maybe talk to us about that. How did that kind of pan out? It went from just around her funeral, and then some reason it just really took off.
Yeah. People are fed up. I don't know. Like, I wish I could give a more in-depth explanation than that, Jake. But it's really the last drip for Kurdish people first, who have nothing to lose. And if those who would suffer from the police the most dare to stand up, the rest of the country couldn't stay behind, because Kurds, whatever they do, they always risk everything. And they will always be more gentle, the government, to other Iranians rising up. So if the Kurds could do it, then there was no reason for anyone else not to do it.
Right. And what kind of, how the protests form? Like, I've seen everything from rocks being thrown to kind of sit-in protests to actual, you know, weapons used on the streets. I think some Baluchi youth, in solidarity with the Kurds and obviously the Iranian people, were actually firing back at the security forces. The internet was even shut down for a bit. Like, what's the status of it all?
So, different. As many regions as Iran has, since the protests were different everywhere else. What you see from a lot of Persian or predominantly Persian cities is, I really don't want to say they don't put their lives at risk, because these days we see a lot of people get arrested. Even people who've just been active online are in prison now. So don't think I'm trying to say anything wrong as a Kurd, but just what we saw in the first days is it felt like the protests in those cities were more cheerful, like the more cheerful images of women dancing, burning their scarves, cutting their hair. We saw that, and at the same time, we saw all kinds of weaponry used against what I saw a lot from Roshalat, from Kurdish Iran, looked way more grim early on already than it did in other regions. So it was kind of blurry and messy and so much going on. It's been 2 weeks now that we're talking. Mm-hmm. And then now, 2 weeks later, and it's so hard to talk about this, Jake, because I feel like it changes every day. But at this current moment, as we're speaking, even those you think would never be put in danger are also captured. For example, there's this young singer who made a beautiful song and kind of kept up the morale of all the protesters. Last night, I read that the police arrested him as well. Or there's this famous picture that's been going viral, that's been going around, of two young women having breakfast in uncovered outfits, no hijab, no long jacket whatsoever, just in jeans. One of those women seems to be in Evin prison right now. So all the imagery seemed more hopeful from some regions, but now there's bad news pouring in, and I hope it will only fuel the anger and people will have the courage to remain on the streets.
It's not looking good, though. From what I saw, they've actually started using like live rounds on protesters now, like shooting them dead and stuff, right? I think there's quite a few killed already. Do you think that this will... I don't want to be pessimistic, but from all the other protests like this, I mean, granted, this is particularly different. Like, this is actually very serious. But anything even remotely close to this has kind of always been put down in Iran with just extreme brutality, massacres. The last time the internet went off, I think like over 1,000 people were shot dead and killed in the streets. Do you think that, you know, this will actually keep going? Or do you think, you know, what's it looking like? This will be put down by massacre, or is it different this time?
Well, this is the question everyone's asking, even those who do go out on the streets and even everyone in diaspora. You have to try and believe in it for it to have a chance to happen. I was actually really pessimistic the other day visiting my mom, and I was like, well, everyone is going to die and no one's going to know about it, and it's going to disappear out of the news and nothing will change. And she was like, shh, if we don't believe it, it will never happen. So we have to keep believing in it and pushing for it and keep supporting everyone out there. And even when she said that, I felt like it's so unfair to keep people within Iran believing while you don't know. You can't promise them anything. So like any time with big protests in Iran, it's always confusing. But at the same time, the signals feel different. It's been going on for weeks. And the people are still so brave. And it just feels, but I don't know how to explain it, Jake. It just feels different than all the other times before. And even if the regime doesn't fall, I feel like they will have to compromise in one way or another this time.
That's serious, yeah. What has the regime been saying, like, you know, on the TV? How have they been presenting this? I imagine they're just saying everyone is a terrorist or something, but yeah, what have they been saying?
Classic framing, of course. What I feel that's going on is two things at the same time. Trying to pretend that it's only a discussion about headscarves and not about human rights or women's rights. And on the other hand, and of course, as a Kurdish Iranian, I see more imagery from that side, trying to change the trope into something that seems like the Kurdish quote-unquote minority is pushing for these protests, or even worse, pretending outside forces, the Kurdish opposition that is based outside of Iran, that they're pushing for these protests and for the unrest in Iran. That's how they're trying to sell it.
It's typical, like, 101, really, playbook. I saw they were particularly kind of framing some of this as, like, you know, a Kurdish issue, a Kurdish revolt. Do you think they're trying to, like, you know, turn people against the Kurds? Like, you know, rather than have people united as they are, do you think they're kind of, you know, trying to make a divide and conquer type thing?
Yes, classic theory, right? And definitely the case. And I think that's also why it's so complicated to judge other Iranians when they say, please, let's just call her Iranian, let's call Gina Iranian, because this is the division no one wants. But at the same time, you can't follow the same playbook as the oppressor, because what are you fighting for then? So that makes it an inner conflict for everyone. But in the end, as a Kurd, we've seen this happen so often in Iran and in other regions, of course. This is the same idea that Turkish government uses. But this time, it's really not the Kurdish opposition pushing for this. They don't even dare touching this too much, because they don't want to get in the way of people fighting for themselves. It's not their time to mingle.
Is it that sort of thing? Like, people are like, yeah, okay, it was a Kurdish situation, but also, you know, it's, you know, she's one of us as well. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, there's an overlap there. And I think if people try to think as activists and are pro-women's rights, you have to be pro-Kurdish rights, pro-human rights, pro any minority. You have to think in these intersections and can't exclude one thought from the other. I mean, there's no one who we can ask, hey, is Gina killed because she was Kurdish, or hey, is Gina killed because she was a woman? It's those two things that put her in that situation and made her feel the way she felt and made them respond the way they did. But we can't ask her, we can't ask them. You can't measure these things either, but it's just these tensions that we know of and that count in these situations.
Yeah. Maybe explain the situation with her name. So, we, like I said, we've been using Gina because from what I understand, that was her name. And the other name that everybody's been using is kind of the state-approved name, right? Because she's not exactly allowed to have the Kurdish name. Can you explain that for us?
Well, first of all, thank you for using her Kurdish name. That's very respectful to Gina as a human.
Yeah.
At the same time, her formal name, Masha, is of course the name she was arrested under, and is also the name probably her family was using in Tehran also when they went to ask about her, and probably also going to the hospital, because you're going to be too afraid to say, hey, where's my Gina, right? Mm-hmm. Until it's too late. First time I noticed her real name was when videos came out from her family screaming her name at the hospital. And then I knew, shit, she's one of us, she's Kurdish. This has so many layers than a Western gaze can see right now. And it immediately felt different because you're going to know the Kurds are going to respond differently to this and more. This pain is so deep. And I know everyone's pain is deep and you can't measure pain. But this pain I could relate to, and I just knew, oh, shit, something is going to come from this. And we have to make clear she was a woman, but she was also Kurdish. So, luckily, everyone on social media got emotional real quick. And her formal name came out before also because the first reports came out of Iran. And the hashtag Masha Amini just caught fire. That divides people into camps. Are you going to push for the agenda for change and stick to the hashtag that everyone knows? Or are you going to push for everything to come out correct and use Gina? Mm. And as a Kurd, I've been struggling with this because, of course, I want people to know her by the name that her mother cries for on Gina's grave and the name that's on her temporary stone. That's who she was. And that's who you should know about also to understand what is happening right now. At the same time, of course, there's this campaigning and there's this change going on, and you don't want to distract from what everyone has been using by this. I wish people just got it right from the beginning, and that's why I think there's a difference between talking about it, writing about it, and tweeting. I think people should use two hashtags now just to make a point about her actual background, but also to make keep it visible under the bigger hashtag Masha Amini.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like, you know, if we're talking about her, we use Gina, but then obviously we also put in the hashtag to get the attention on it. You know what I mean? But I think it's okay. Yeah, it's kind of like complicated, but I do think it's important to keep doing that. I think even for me, it was like the very basic thing of what would she have been called at home? What would her mum and dad have referred to her as, Gina? So for me, it was like, well, then that's what it is. You know what I mean? It was simple as that, I think.
Yeah, and it's the most honorful to use someone's actual name.
Right, especially if they've died in such a fucking brutal way, you know?
Exactly. And also, her name is so meaningful, especially the way we're going to read about this in history. You can't ignore her name because it is so meaningful in so many layers. Just the idea that you can't have, it's not normal to have a formal name that is Kurdish. Also, the sound of Z is very Kurdish. Like my own parents named two of my siblings, gave them a name with the Z just because of the Kurdishness and because of the nice sound, of course. And So there's that. And then there's also the meaning of her name means life. And then the slogan that Iranian protesters have adapted from a Kurdish slogan, her name is in there. And we will get to that slogan, I'm sure, but the Kurdish idea of women equal life, equal freedom, and her name being life as a woman, just imagine the layers in her name, and how can you exclude that from talking about this?
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, let's talk about that. The kind of the phrase now is Jinjan Azadi, which, you know, like you just said, women, life, freedom. And they're essentially, everyone is using that right now in Iran. But even now I'm seeing, even some people are saying, no, use the Iranian version, like the Persian version. How relevant is that on the ground? Is that just like a diaspora social media thing, or is that like relevant there too?
You know, there's so many ways to read into what is happening, and it's good to be aware of your own position. For example, for me in all of this, and in this I am nobody, so I'm trying to follow and feel what is going on inside. And the first language in Iran is Farsi, so I get that they adapted to their own language, but it's the same thing as with Gina's name. It's just bad if the origin disappears, and it's disappearing. I've seen other Middle Easterns claim Jinjan Azadi. I've seen big Iranian influencers erasing the history of that phrase. That's where it's dangerous, but you can't blame people on the streets to chant in their own first language.
Yeah.
So what I would hope for, but who am I other than just someone in diaspora closely following this for years, is I hope they will mention both, because that would mean there's space for Kurdish identity within the larger Iranian community, right? It means you can be both at the same time, as a lot of people are saying. If it's true that you can be Kurdish and Iranian, then I want to hear the Kurdish and the Farsi sentence at least.
Yeah, I think that's the way forward as well.
Yeah, and it just sounds nicer in Kurdish, because that's where it stems from. It just makes more sense. And I hope that whoever uses it now feels and understands the depth of it, and the revolutionary women who have brought it up before them.
Yeah. And Iran now has started actually bombing Kurdistan, or the Kurdish region in Iraq, northern Iraq. Killed a lot of people, literally bombs flying over the heads of children. One reporter has lost two legs. I think hundreds of people have been killed now. What's going on? Why are they bombing on the other side of the border, hitting the Kurds in Iraq?
Well, that's because of something we shortly spoke about in the beginning, earlier. It's the perfect distraction from Iran, first of all, and I'll explain a little bit more about it. And it's the way to point the Kurds, to blame all of this chaos, quote unquote, on the Kurds. I think by hitting, and it's specifically aimed at the Kurdish opposition movements that have been existing for decades and that have had their share in the 79 revolution in Iran, and then later were the first ones to get slaughtered, really, and to get banned. These movements are still active, and every now and then Iran puts pressure on them. And of course, this is the perfect timing to do so again. You can read this in two ways. First is, this is the Islamic Republic of Iran trying to blame everything on the Kurds and show the people of Iran, hey, look how they are trying to interfere across the border from Iraq. They're trying to influence the Kurdish population in Iran. And push for this unrest, right? So that's one way to look at it. But the other way, which I prefer, is it must be such a mess in their heads at the government in Iran that this is one of their last resorts, hopefully, trying to make the people in Kurdistan and the rest of Iran fear going out on the streets by showing what they can do indirectly by harming others. And it's a technique or a tactic that they've been using more often. It's easier to target a minority's opposition across the border than to do this in your own on your own ground. And symbolically, they've launched, and Jake, you're better at this. I never know what's a rocket, what's a drone, whatsoever. Yeah. That's your domain. But whatever they sent, they launched it from Iranian Kurdistan into Iraqi Kurdistan, and specifically from around Sardasht, where my family is from as well. So that hurts double, because these people are loaded with fear and anger, and you use their backyard to hit their comrades and friends across the border.
Yeah, well, I was reading some of the kind of, you know, justifications from Iran is that they're hitting PDKI, PJAK, Kamala, PAK, Peshmerga. Like, they're hitting, you know, Rojalati or Iranian Kurdish resistance groups. But obviously, we know they were just hitting residential areas and killing civilians. But that said, what have the, you know, the Kurdish resistance groups in Iran done or said? Has there been much chatter from them? Because, you know, some of them are pretty seriously armed, and they have a lot of flow of weapons across the borders and stuff like that. And they are, you know, they have a lot of experience in fighting. You know, okay, yeah, it's in a guerrilla way, but I mean, that might be the way these protests actually end up kind of coming to. Yeah, well, has there been much, you know, much coming from those groups?
Yes, and there's also been demands to those groups. Last week, when the city of Shuno was liberated for one night, some protesters were chanting, KDPI, we need you here. You need to come now. And a lot of people have been asking, even before, are they going to go in? Are they going to go back? And there's a mix of idealism, of emotions, and of hope there that the Peshmerga will return, which would be historical because they've left for decades. So there's that. But there's also these movements like KDPI, Komala, and the others, where they know this is not the way for them to go in, because if they're even a target, and if even school kids in Koya, for example, in Iraqi Kurdistan, are targeted by the Islamic Republic's regime, then no way should Peshmerga go in now, should these movements go in now, because they'll turn these protests into a massacre.
Yeah, and it will forever, give them a reason, right?
Yes, it will give them a reason.
And not that they needed one, but still.
Yes, and then the idea of the propaganda that Iran is trying to spread will seem true, right? Mm-hmm. If you go in and they've been saying, hey, these Kurdish movements are creating a mess in our country, and they go in and the mess is there, then maybe it will seem like they were right. So this is not the time for them to go in, and I think they know. But of course, this is their struggle, and they've been supporting the people of Iran within their capacity for all these years. And I'm sure their hands are itching to do something, but they'll have to do it in a diplomatic and longer lasting way than going in with Peshmerga and weapons right now. And as a Kurd, it hurts to say this, even because, of course, I have family within that movement. So as an emotional person, I would say, oh, I can't wait for the day to see them there. But it would be wrong.
Yeah, you got to be pragmatic.
Yes.
Also, I think as well, like, there's a risk of alienating protesters, because like we've said, it's not just Kurds, it's everybody, all oppressed peoples across Iran now are fighting. I think you have a problem there where you might end up alienating one part of that. The Iranians might be like, oh, well, these Kurdish guys came in, women came in with guns, now we're getting even worse. Like, you know what I mean? It could change the tide in a bad way.
And take away focus of all the other areas in Iran. And as much as how this started as a women's right issue that ignited it, and then underneath that, the layer of it being Kurdish, and the balance between all these topics, it needs the same balance also while people are out on the streets. This is not the time for anyone to make this about them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the best way. In terms of the intensity of the protests, are they slowing down? You know, it's 2 weeks now. Lots of people have died. What's the situation?
We're at this point where it gets harder and harder to get imagery from the inside. As an activist friend last night, who's used every VPN out there, all the ways to avoid the internet issues, his last resort was texting me. And if he doesn't know what's going on, if they don't know, then no one knows. So it's harder to keep in touch and to keep an overview of what is going on in your own city and in other cities across Iran. Yeah. And therefore, that will definitely influence morale. At the same time, if you've crossed the bridge halfway, you're not going to turn back yet. We're going to see in the next couple of days. I hope the morale is still high and these killings and internet blocking and all the police outside harming protesters. I hope it will only fuel their fire. At the same time, you don't want to have more people being imprisoned and killed because of this, of course. So I just hope they can push something over and get this thing over the hill.
And what is it exactly? I mean, I know, you know, we get why they're protesting, but essentially their goal is what? Like the end of the regime?
Yes, it's the end of the regime. But for a lot of people, it's safe to join the protests and the movements because the catalyzer is more freedom for women.
From what I've seen as well, it seems to be that, okay, yeah, the country is run by this despotic, sectarian regime, but the people of Iran seriously seem to not be on board with it. I've never met an Iranian that I haven't got on with. Like, they've been really lovely. When I was in prison in Turkey, the first guy that took us under his wing to kind of protect us from jihadists was an Iranian guy. You know, I've always gotten with Iranian people, and I've never met one that is actually like, yeah, we love, you know, like the brutal oppression in the country. It seems to me like culturally, it's just at odds with what the Iranian people want. I don't know. Would you say that's accurate or not?
Oh, it's definitely accurate, but of course, we can't talk for everyone. And there's always going to be regime fanatics who are more comfortable with this lifestyle. But it's not healthy to operate a country from this thinking and force your view on life on people like this. So I think a lot of people will want a different way of life, but there will always be people who are pro this situation. But probably most of them know. So if whatever is going to happen, and if Iran is ever going to change, we have to keep in mind that there's a reason people believed in this previous revolution, in the 79 revolution. And a lot of people quickly found out it was not what they thought it would be, but there will always be people who actually think like this. Mm. So there will always be this conflict amongst the people. And this won't be the only conflict because just as in healthy democracies, there are so many different point of views. So it will always have to be everyone talking to each other and kind of making it livable for everyone else.
Yeah. I've even seen footage of women confronting mullahs, you know, even like on the subway or wherever in Iran, being like, no, you know, well, it's the mullahs confronting them like, oh, you're a whore because something, some outrageous, like a bit of their hair is showing or whatever. But I've actually seen the footage of the women turning back and saying like, no, I'm not going to listen to you. And then also seen footage of men stepping in and being like, hey, like, no, you don't talk to her like that. It seems like even outside of protests, you know, the murder of Gina has kind of galvanized people to be like, hey, actually, no, we're not going to have this anymore, which I thought was like particularly interesting. That's not normal, right?
It's not normal. It's also maybe these are the signs that, how do you say that in proper English? If like their power has already been toppled, because if you don't fear facing them anymore, and of course there is fear amongst a lot of people, and I don't see my Kurdish aunts do this because it really depends on where you are and who you are. But you can take away their power by these types of behavior already, right? So it already shows that however their system worked, it has been broken already.
Yeah, like people are not respecting it anymore. Maybe maybe explain, if you can, like the kind of role of the mullahs in Iran, like what is their actual role? Because I'm kind of assuming that people know here, but it's a particularly like complicated situation.
So to explain it as simple as I can, there's a government, but there's also the Ayatollahs, and their religious power is the highest power, with Khamenei on top. So basically, whatever he says is how it should go. And within every city, there's high religious figures that actually keep an eye on that power. And then at the same time, there's our usual government system that is heavily influenced by this and kind of has to obey their rules. Is that a good explanation?
Yeah, and what are their rules?
Islamic rule, a very tight Islamic ruling. And for example, if you look at, and this is just next to all the other bullshit and oppression. This is just the idea of having religion or religious figures as your head of state, right? So it's, for example, by law, women are only worth half of men. For example, let's say some, Jake, my English is gone. Let me switch it back on. For example, in a family, the daughters will only get half of their parents' belongings if they pass away. Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. And then what else? Like all these things, or a woman can't just divorce her husband while her husband can just do it with a sentence. So women are just worthless. And look at the law for execution. People can be hanged for being queer, for example. So it's all these inhumane things that are law in Iran. And this is apart from the oppression that they just do because they feel like it. But usually when they suspect Kurds, for example, of being activists, they blame them, and this is by law, they go against the Islamic foundation of the country. That's what they would get executed for.
Yeah, my friend, his uncle, I think he was something to do with Kamala, one of the Kurdish resistance groups there. And they basically just, I don't think they could fully prove it or whatever, not that they care, but they just said, yeah, he's gay. I don't think he was. You know what I mean? It's no one. I mean, if he was, whatever, fine. Like, they were just like, yeah, he's gay, and then they just hanged him for it. You know what I mean? It was like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, initially he was arrested for activism, and then he was hanged for being gay. And it was like, wow. Like, when you have these rules in place, I mean, they can just do what they want, you know?
Exactly. So, I hope you got it. I explained it so bad. I hope you got it. And if the listeners don't understand, maybe you can summarize what I just tried to say.
No, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. I mean, it's a complicated situation. And it's, you know, for me, it's like, well, you are from the region. You know what I mean? It's a lot more, makes a lot more sense if you explain it. You're going to know it more than I ever will. But in terms of the future of the protests, I know we can't really, you know, predict anything, but where do you think they're headed?
That's the toughest question right now.
Yeah.
And as we discussed earlier on, whatever happens, something will change. You can't fully go back to how it used to be a couple of weeks ago. And also, I think the new generation, Gen Z, that's been on the streets as well, is different. They're really different. And I feel like they have something in their hands. How so? Maybe because they are less affected by the traumas and fear of other generations. And they live online anyway. So their idea of Iran is very much connected to their idea of the entire world, more than even us millennials, you know? So... yeah, they want the lives they see on their screens, maybe. I don't know, but they're going to do something. If anyone is going to change it, it's going to be them. At the same time, maybe you've seen this video well of a young boy's funeral in Kurdistan, and his father standing on his grave saying, please don't let the youth die. At least we've had a long life. We have to join them. We can't just send them out on the streets and take a nap at home while they're out there. So it's going to be everyone together. I believe what he says. But I feel like even if something doesn't change in the coming weeks, in the coming time, this door has opened inside this new generation that's not going to take this forever.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing as well. Like, I've seen, you know, you see protests and people be like, oh, what's the point? They're never going to win. You know, the odds are clearly stacked against them. And it's like, well, yeah, they might not win this time, but that might inspire the next generation that takes from them and then does win. It's like, if you're being oppressed, you can't just accept it. You know what I mean? Even if you're not going to win now or, yeah, okay, it seems futile, I think, to do nothing is even worse, you know? Not that I'm advocating for anybody to do anything. I mean, I live in Britain. I mean, it's a cesspit, but, you know, we're not getting thrown in prison for, you know, for having views against our government. Not yet, anyway. But, you know, it does seem to me that from my travels, it's like the people that at least try, it kind of, I don't know, like you said, it lasts forever, that.
Exactly. So, and that's actually an optimistic note. If it's not now, then... still one day. At the same time, this is what my parents' generation have been saying their entire lives as well.
What's the situation with the internet right now? Is it still down?
It's going on and off. Sometimes nothing works. Sometimes half the internet works. Sometimes half of the apps work. Some of the VPNs work. None of them work. There seem to be a few hours per day that are kind of a loophole. And sometimes it's only one region, sometimes it's many places. Downscale it, but in my head it really feels like there's this man in this room pressing buttons and being like, now this town, now these people. Then it's very arbitrary. At the same time, clearly, some regions are harder to get news out or stay in touch with family and friends because they have the least internet.
Yeah. What are you hearing from family, you know, when you do manage to speak to them?
With family, to be fair, I don't dare talking about this directly too much. also because I'm vocal and I'm comfortably living outside of Iran. Mm. There's a few friends that are really active that I talk to about this and about the protests. And they need us. They really need people outside to stay vocal and to echo their images and their news and updates. That's what I hear from them. So even when I feel useless, just seeing that they feel seen does something. But they have the same questions and fears politically as the ones we just discussed. Where will this go? How long will it take? Will there be a change? And at the same time, for them personally, it's like, do I go out again today? Should I take some rest? How can I take some rest? What if I get killed? What is my life worth? Is it worth leaving? The personal questions are, of course, more hurtful and painful at this moment than the bigger topics that we discuss.
Yeah. When you say you don't really want to talk to them about it, is it because you're worried that that will put them in danger, do you mean?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Is Iran, I mean, you know, in the West, I mean, we're one to talk. We live in a fucking surveillance state. You can't breathe without some tech bro or government watching you. But what's it like over there? Are they got like a handle on like monitoring everybody the same way that they do over here, like online and stuff?
Oh, probably better than us.
Really? Yeah.
I'm sure they keep an eye on us too, Jake.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They'll hear this, no doubt. And in terms of the raids, how prevalent are them? I've been hearing that a lot of activists have been getting raided and arrested, but like you said, it's hard to get information from the country. Have you heard much about that?
Yes, and the last couple of days, it's even more the type of social media influencers, artists, performers that are also getting raided and arrested. So it's not even your quote-unquote typical activist. It's everyone now, and it's also a lot of people that for some reason, it felt they had the space and privilege to speak out. They are in danger now, too.
It's like they're trying to go for all the cultural things that spur on a popular protest. You know, if they're going after dancers, singers, that is what will often like galvanize the kind of feeling of solidarity and protest amongst such people.
Yes, they're going for the Turkish strategy now, you could say. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's hope things get better. I don't know. It's looking bad, but we'll see. Barry, is there anything else you want to mention before we go?
Thank you for this time and space. And I think everyone who listens should know what we're saying now might be different if you listen to this in 3 days. But yeah, hopefully it can give you an idea of what's been going on. And I hope we haven't excluded too many perspectives. This was just to give everyone a global idea and some depth and feeling into what is happening inside Iran. And of course, if we're going to talk, the Kurdish perspective is going to be a little bit dominant, but that's not to take away focus of what everyone has been doing and fighting for. But it's good to know. It's really good to know and then to understand what is happening inside Iran.
Absolutely, and no, I agree completely. If people want to get in touch with you on social media or wherever, where can they do it? Where can they find your work?
Hopefully you can put it in the show notes somewhere. You can find me everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, yeah. Facebook, if you still know how to open that, just anywhere you want.
Facebook, I haven't had that for years. You've got Facebook, yeah. Your Twitter is probably the best way, right?
Yes, the easiest,
fastest. Yeah, and that's BERISHALMASHI. I say it because I found that no one looks in the show notes, so they'll hear it and hopefully they'll type it in that way.
Thank you.
All right, no problem. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you too.
That was writer and director Berry Shalmashi talking to us about the tragic murder of Jina Mahsa Amini and the subsequent clashes, riots, uprising, maybe, all across Iran. If you want to support us, please check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/popularfront. There's lots and lots of extra content on there for your money. We are entirely grassroots. We do not take money from any corporate investors or anything like that. So the way we keep going is basically people support us on the Patreon. Or if you want, you can buy merchandise, our t-shirts, they look cool. Popularfront.shop, check all of that out. In the next week, there will be another drop of new stuff coming. Also, there's some more copies available of Front Wave, the collectible cassette that we're selling. Music of Sam Black, Sam Black who makes all the music for Popular Front. Go to popularfront.shop. Thank you to our sponsors. They are Oracle Coffee Shop in Portland, Oregon, USA. They're an independent coffee business selling only fair trade products. See them at 3875 Southwest Bond Avenue, 97239. Also, Grindcore House, a pair of independent coffee shops in Philadelphia, USA. One in South, one in West. Find them on socials at Grindcore House. Oh, and also, sorry, if you go to Oracle Coffee Shop now and tell them, I don't know, Popular Front send you, you will get a discount. I think there was a code, I forgot it. Sorry, Francis, just tell them that. And you'll get the discount. Also, sponsoring this episode, Propagandopolis, an outlet selling and writing about historical conflict propaganda from around the world. You can buy prints at propagandopolis.com. Use the promo code PopularFront10 for 10% off. If you want to follow us on socials, Instagram, it's at popular.front. TikTok is at popular.front. YouTube.com/popularfront. And Twitter is at popularfront_. If you want to follow me for anything, it's at Jake_Hanrahan. HANRAHAN. Same as my site. If you want to check out my work or get in contact with me specifically, jakehanrahan.com. Music in this episode, the intro was by Home and the outro was by Sam Black. Check his music out at samblackpf.com. Thank you very much to our high tier Patreons. They are VS, Brian R, Even Pank, Bradley Hope, Wizard Actual, Claire Hoffbauer, Benjamin Topper, Chongus Bongwater, Elijah Finley, Siddhartha O, Cameron Collins, Q Loves Cake Farts, Nicholas Blomberg, Matthew Diffley, Jane Milichip, Claire, Liana, Sean, Christianovich, NTHG, Arturo Rafael Macias, Ethan Zwick, Champagne Anarchist, Lisa Middlefart, David McManus, Tom Petrie, James Leons, Lisa Milgram, Bradley Davies, No Dogs, No Hamsters, Brendan Crave, B, Drift, RX, Tiki Lover, Cherry, Ben Marshall, Dallas Dunn, Shikhar Gupta, LD50 Seattle, The Band, K Glitter Vulcan, Bethany Swoveland, Adam H, Derivative Fool, Bottle of Water, Larson 8669, Ivan Julian, I think it is, Bjorn Kirsten, Diamondstein, Michael O'Connor, Jack Doherty, Nicholas Butter, JD, Jav, Ian Froese, James Cully, Tynan Daly, Ethan, Shanklin the Painter, Fitzmadrid, Ed Coulthard, Mike Barone, Ben, Liam Williams, Degenerate Zero Alpha, Giorgio Arani, DR, Amy R, Rubicon, Frank Austin, Amelia Mee, Christina Ravetti, Freya Northman, Noah, Andrew Hurley, Avita Provost, Brian McLaughlin, Tom Lochrin, Young Wasabi, Tony Bin, Adam Bergsnyder, JL, Stephen Davila, Dan Dunham, Fletcher, Chad Walker, Diana Govanek, Lawrence Abrahams, Pete McCormick from What Bitcoin Did, Christopher Martin, Ryan Sandercock, and Moritz Zumbul. Thank you all so much. Really do appreciate all the support. If you want to support us again, patreon.com/popularfront or go to popularfront.co/support. And if you want a list of all our links and everything, I've made popularfront.cc. It's essentially a redirect to the link tree, but yeah, you'll get it all there. Thanks for supporting.